sharp blade of serrated stainless steel. And it's free when you buy any one of these products.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our AFL Women segment. Not the National Women's League anymore, the AFL Women segment for the State Guys podcast. Today I'm joined by Nick Welch. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm very well, Caleb. How about you?
I'm going well, thank you. There's been a few pieces of news in the AFL Women's World recently. There's been a few signings from other sports, especially Olympic sports. There's been a couple of interesting signings as a result of the exhibition match that was played at the Wind Oval not too long ago. And we're also just going to have a quick look at the influence of the coaches in the AFL Women's World and how the Western Bulldogs and Melbourne have approached this. And we'll just have a we'll just go in quick examples of that. But we'll start off with the news that Kim Nicol, the Australian javelin athlete, has moved to Fremantle.
Well, I mean, I've watched her live at the Olympics when she had dislocated her shoulder, though. So little did I know at the time that she'd be a Fremantle player in a matter of months. So
wasn't exactly something that crossed my mind when I saw her dislocate her shoulder.
Yeah, so definitely a sort of surprise signing when a lot of these other teams are signing, you know, basketballs or sort of players who've played it a little bit. She's a bit older and sort of a bit of a unique sport in that regard, but she's definitely demonstrated athleticism.
Yeah, for sure. What do you see her offering to the team despite her athletic prowess? What do you see her offering to an AFL team?
Well, part of it's probably just the professionalism aspect. I mean, she's been a multiple Olympic athlete, and, you know, she's in her 30s now, though, so, you know, quite a many years dedicating herself to be the best in her sport. And I think that's something that offers the fact that this AFL Women's League is more professional than the state leagues that they have in the past, that she'll just offer a bit of leadership in that. But purely from sort of like a player tactical perspective, that's the thing. It's a great unknown. These players haven't played a lot of footy, and presumably the coaches don't even know what positions they're most adept to playing. They probably test them, see that their athletics ability and skills are up to scratch, but not until they start doing, you know, more sort of match simulated training will they realise the strength of their positions.
Yeah, definitely agree with you on that one. It's certainly going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Fremantle has signed a basketballer, but not exactly a basketballer you expect. Gabby O'Sullivan, she, like I said, she's a basketballer, but she's not a very tall one.
Yeah, she played point guard. She's a local Perth-based athlete, and she played our college basketball and making her way home, presumably. And she's like a point guard, so she wasn't a tall ruck expected signing in that. And I think I commented to you before a few weeks ago in one of our podcasts for this AFL Women's League, I'm a bit surprised that they haven't tried to convert more, you know, 6-foot-plus converted basketballs for rucks, but still, presumably it's a good signing. I mean, we know Fremantle's done their, you know, their talent searches academies. You know, they've trained, like, athletes from multiple sports, you know, dozens and dozens of them, and presumably Gabby O'Sullivan went to that academy and demonstrated her footballing ability. So hopefully that's a good signing for Fremantle, because we all know, like, how their Western Australian talent has been poached through the priority picks and the marquees from other clubs. So they'll definitely need to, you know, find the best of their local talent, and Gabby O'Sullivan could be one of them.
Yeah, they've got a plethora of talent over there in Western Australia. It's good to see. I think it's good to see that Freo holding on to a little bit of that talent, which is good.
Yeah.
Erin Phillips has been signed by the Adelaide Crows, and she's another Olympian who has won a silver medal with the Opals, and she's been signed as a rookie, and she's a very good athlete. And she, you know, despite the fact that there's only, like, some clubs have made 3 signings, some have stuck with their marquee signings, she's the Crows' 6th signing.
Yeah, because they made their 2 rookie signings, you know, players from sports from other clubs, on top of 2 priority picks and 2 marquees, so they've made more signings than anyone else. But Phillips came out and said, you know, she wouldn't play for anyone else but Port, because she has got that family connection with Port Adelaide. And then, you know, Port didn't, you know, withdrew their bid, and now she's signed for Adelaide, the local club. And from all accounts, she's an absolute gem. I mean, she's obviously a gun basketballer. We talk about all these recruits in basketball but they're local players or, you know, college players. She was, like, an Australian. Like, she played for Australia, so that just shows you how good she was. And, like, she played in the, I've heard the Slowdown, you know, like, EJ Wynn's Legends game, but, like, you know, for South Australia, you know, playing the word Showdown, Slowdown. And apparently, absolutely dominated for someone who, like, didn't play footy. So, I think I'd put my money on her being one of, if not the best footballers in this competition recruited from another sport. Like, she's just got all the athletic track. Plus, she's got the height, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I could definitely see her adding, you know, adding a lot of elements to the Crows team. She could definitely be an important player heading into the AFL Women's League
and
next season.
It'll definitely be a sort of a good bonus for Adelaide, because they're probably one of the weaker teams heading forward, you know, with the South Australian talent being a bit sort of weaker than other states, and maybe they're missing out a couple of the better sort of marquees that we sort of rated a bit more, though. So that could be the point of difference for Adelaide, given how, you know, that could be better than some of the other rookies from other clubs.
Yeah. Yep. Melbourne signed Karen Paxman as a priority pick, and considering that she was one of the best on ground, if not the best on ground, in the exhibition match at the Witten Oval a couple of weeks ago,
yeah,
it's a very solid signing from a list management perspective.
Definitely, definitely. And sort of no surprises there. She was definitely the best player in that All-Stars game that hadn't already been signed to a club. And she just played for Darabin in the Women's VFL Grand Final, though, so, and played very well in that game, though, so I'm sure they'll be very happy with that performance. It also means that Melbourne have got another midfielder. So Paxman and Daisy Pearce are looking like they're two main midfielders for next year on top of Mel Hickey running out of defence.
Yeah, yeah, and I think she could definitely, like, as a midfielder, as you say, she's, like, she collected the most possessions on the ground in that, in the exhibition match. And she could definitely, like, you think that Melbourne have got that, they've got Daisy Pearce, the sort of the danger field spot, the competition.
Every gun midfielder you can think of combined.
Yeah, but you think of someone like Karen Paxman.
Yeah,
and she'd be like the perfect foil for a player like Daisy Pearce.
Definitely, I mean Daisy Pearce just does everything, but Paxman's a ball magnet as well, so they'll give opposition teams two things to think about.
The Dogs have signed the junior state netballer Libby Birch, who played in the final half of the year with Darabin, who ended up winning the VFL Women's Grand Final. We'll talk about that a bit later.
Yeah.
But that signing looks to be a pretty solid one for the Dogs to go with their marquees in Emma Kearney and Katie Brennan.
And I think, sorry, Katie Brennan and Ali Buckley in their marquees. They're Kearney.
Sorry, I got mixed up there, sorry.
Yeah, so she's sort of like, mightn't have been an elite athlete for other sports, but she's still 18, so I think Dogs have actually been one of the younger teams. Dogs have actually signed some of the younger players. I mean, with Brennan, I think, only 23, and Blackburn, 21, so definitely got them going forward. And I don't know much about Libby Birch, obviously, but she's started playing football halfway through the year and already got into the firsts at Darabin, you know, the strongest team in the country. So she's clearly got a bit of talent, and with 18, like, playing the game for half a year and 18, obviously she's got a heap of development left in her. So I think the Dogs have one eye, maybe to not just this year, but beyond sort of this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of clubs, especially with this AFL Women's League just getting started, a lot of clubs are just looking at the now, and I think the Dogs are doing really well at looking at the now and into the future.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at Collingwood's rookie signings, Helen Roden and Kate Sheehan, and both are in their 30s. So even if they, you know, turn out to be Jets, they're probably, and they, you know, develop as players, they're probably declining year on year just given their age.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I applaud the Dogs for their forward thinking in that sense, just because, you know, if I was to be a list manager at a football club and this league was just to be starting up,
yeah,
my thoughts wouldn't go towards looking into the future unless someone really sort of
prodded you,
you know, it sort of told me, and like that doesn't bode well for my
because
list management.
We don't actually know what are the sort of the rules are for retaining club lists, because like for retaining players in the list, because there's talk that there's going to be another two teams added possibly for next year's competition. And maybe they're going to expand the competition, play more games. If the season's a success, you know, play it during the winter months rather than during the autumn. So we actually don't know the extent to which these clubs can keep these players into the future. So the Dogs are taking a risk in that regard, because maybe they're, like, you know, similar to, like, how American franchises go, they, like, you know, when it, how they work in American sports. Clubs might be only able to claim, like, 15 of the 25 left on their list or something, or that there's just, we don't know the rules. So whilst the Dogs are going young, it's actually not guaranteed, if that sort of makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see what you mean by that, because, like as we've said a couple of times, it's the first season of the competition.
Yeah.
So we don't really know much about how it's going to work. And
yeah,
whilst it's a good move for the Dogs to look into the future, who knows what the regulations are going to be on being able to be
Because, you know, there's a draft for, like, some teams, like, you know, Victorian-based teams, so there's not draft for other teams. How does trading work? Like, do you trade for picks or do you trade for players, or, you know, there's no salary cap to worry about because they're getting paid predetermined amounts. So, like, do you get what I mean? Like, what if a player wants to base themselves into another state? Like, do they go through? Like, it's just so much confusion going on. So,
yeah,
like, yeah, so hopefully the Dogs, you know, realise that they're going to keep these players heading into the future, but we just don't know whether they can. Like, we probably will, but...
Yeah, like, I'm probably stating the obvious here, but we're going to know a lot more at the end of the first season.
Yeah.
Just not from an on-field perspective, but from an off-field perspective.
Yeah.
Like, how much freedom do players have in terms of being wanting to move clubs?
Yeah.
And how much freedom do clubs have in terms of
trading, making
trades in general?
Yeah. Like, because, you know, there's a state-based draft, doesn't mean next year there's going to be, like, a fully national draft. Like, what if the league's a massive success, and we hope it is? So they have a full year league, and they get paid, like, you know, the news at netball, they're getting paid an average of 70-odd grand a year. Hopefully the female players can get paid that much. So it's like a proper national league where they don't have to remain based in their home state. So maybe that's a proper trading system going on. But as far as we know, there isn't going to be that next year.
Mm. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. We'll just have a quick, discuss the influence of the coaches in women's footy. Now, a lot of focus has been on the players ever since the AFL women's idea has been proposed.
Yeah.
But there, obviously the I think the Bulldogs, department are the best coaching department. But it's interesting to look at, considering that the Western Bulldogs and Melbourne teams both have a lot more experience and more of an understanding of the women's game, and it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out and how the coaching will have an impact on which teams will perform the best coming into the first season.
Okay, so Melbourne and Bulldogs, even though they've, you know, played the history of the exhibition games, aren't having the same coaches. Both have appointed new coaches for next year. You know, the Dogs have had a whole heap of different coaches. You know, Peter Saleh before she went to St Kilda, and Craig Starkovich, now up in Queensland for Brisbane, you know, because he's based there. You know, their coaches in the past before Paul Groves coached the All-Stars game and is their coach for next year. So they don't have the same, you know, pool of resources that they did when they, you know, drafted the teams back in 2013 or whatever, the research that they did for that. However, Paul Groves, you know, has coached youth teams, girls' youth teams in the past.
But I think the way that I see it, at the very least, is that the Bulldogs and Melbourne players, and at least some of their footballing department, will have that sort of coaching expertise in their pocket.
Not just that, though. Sort of, a lot of these clubs didn't know that they'd get a license to play in the league until July this year. So they weren't assembling list management teams to scour the depths of the local Victorian league. However, Dogs and the Bulldogs have been, because they have had to, you know, draft players in the past. So that's probably an advantage. But Michelle Cowan, who was Melbourne's coach in these exhibition games, is now over at Freo.
Yeah, I think, as we've said a few times in relation to this, it'll be very interesting how it plays out in the first season, just because like the coaching staff, like we don't know a lot, like we don't know a lot about it as we do players. It'll certainly be interesting. Like obviously, you've got a player like Craig Starcevic, a premiership player at Collingwood, who can offer a lot to a club like
Brisbane. And just on Starcevic, him and Cowan at Freo are going to be critical because those clubs, Fremantle and Brisbane, are taking the lion's share of their players from their local leagues. I mean, both have priority picks and, you know, rookies and marquees, but at the end of the day, they're compiling, you know, 14, 15, 16 players of their 25 from the best of their local league. So Starcevic especially is going to be critical to, you know, hand-pick the best AFL Queensland-based players. And Cowan, you know, she's just got years and years of experience in women's footage. She definitely understands the talent. So compare that to the Victorian clubs. You know, we've got to go through the unexpected of a draft, you know, develop draft boards and that. They've got to make contingency plans whilst these other clubs, you know, can just scour the talent. So I reckon, you know, Adelaide, Brisbane and Fremantle have a definite advantage in that they're just spending their time between now and when the list has to be confirmed, just scouting, discussing, trying to balance without the unexpected.
We'll briefly talk about the VFL Women's Grand Final and how the season finished up. Obviously, Darabin got the victory in the end, but it was certainly a landmark season, wasn't it?
Well, it was the first women's VFL season, because before it used to be called the Victorian Women's Football League, and now it still exists, but they've attached it to the men's VFL and, you know, added more teams in that. So it's been a successful year all round, and 4,500 odd people went to the women's grand final today in Coburg, and I didn't manage to go down, but I did watch some of the stream on TV. And I think Emma Carney absolutely dominated in a losing team for Melbourne Uni. She had 37, I think, touches it was. So her and Ali Blackburn, you know, the two main midfielders, Dogs fans will be very happy about that.
And I think the Dogs have a very... In general, the Dogs have a very good midfield setup. I mean, they've got, as you say, Emma Kearney, Kay Brennan, they've got Ellie Blackburn, and they're probably going to sign Steph Chiocci through the draft.
If they don't take the first pick, I'll be very surprised. Not so much for footballing terms, but just the history. You know, she's been captain for the Dogs for the last 3 years in the exhibition games. So now that the season's done and dusted, I mean, quite a few Darabin players are almost certainly going to be drafted. But I think I was looking through the list and I was surprised at how many of them had already been signed to a team. You know, Vessio won the best player on the ground for the grand final. She's already at Carlton. Brennan kicked a brilliant goal from about 55 metres out, as I saw on the live stream, and she's already at Dogs. And Daisy Pierce was their best player, though. So there's not much you can take out in terms of who was the dominant performance, but they're definitely, you know, from a draft perspective, but there definitely would have been, you know, multiple scouts from all four Melbourne-based clubs having a look at which players to draft.
Yeah, I mean, you think back to the exhibition match, and a lot of people would be looking at that, but then there's this game which offers a hell of a lot, as well as the women's match, and a lot of women's players wouldn't have been taking this game too lightly. They would have been looking to impress the club scouts.
Yeah, and I think the rucks for Melbourne Uni, you know, with I think it was Alicia Jance, I think it was, if I can remember recall correctly. I think she played a solid game in the ruck, and she could be one who gets picked up in the draft. I mean, yeah, and like you said before, there's more players who are not assigned to a team in this league, especially because, you know, than there were in the All-Stars game. And obviously, in the All-Stars game, there would have been, you know, only a handful of Victorian talent not assigned to a team that could be drafted by one of the clubs. Maybe, I don't know, I'm guessing it, but maybe 10 players or something. There would have been, you know, 30-odd players not assigned to a team. So that's definitely something that they have a look at.
There probably would have been a lot more focus on this game in comparison to the exhibition game, just because there were more unsigned players.
Yeah, and also I think one player who did themselves no harm was Nicola Stevens. She played in the All-Star game as well, and she was critical in defence. she was critical in defence today. And same with Cecilia McIntosh, you know, was in the All-Star game as well. They all played very good games. And I think some club, you know, looking for defenders in Melbourne, because obviously Brianna Davey is signed and Mel Hickey, but Collingwood and Dogs don't have any defenders, so they'll definitely be looking at, you know, those sort of more key defenders to build on for the future.
Yeah, and I think considering that there's been a lot of midfielders signed already by other clubs, key position players and rucks, there's probably a lot more interest in those sort of players in comparison to midfielders.
And also, from what I could see for the stream, I'm going to watch the full replay when I have more time because, you know, I want to do my scouting and that. Just Dalpos through forward and midfield. She really impressed me, and she wasn't assigned to a team for Darabin, so I expect her to go very, very early.
Yeah, and I think there'll be a lot of players who have done themselves no harm today.
Definitely.
Finally, we'll just have a quick look at GWS. They've only signed their marquee players at the moment, and they've got a bunch of priority picks, which they're still yet to use. And I think, Nick, that they should probably start, you know, they've probably got a plan. But I think if I, like, had I been on their list management team, I'd be more willing to make a move sooner rather than later.
Well, they've got only Emma Swanson who's going to play for them next year. That's one player. So they've got a heap of priority picks to make up for the fact that, you know, the New South Wales talent isn't as strong as other states. And they haven't used either of their rookie signings from other clubs, though. So depending on which states that they recruit these priority players from, that could actually tip the balance of who's good. If they, you know, go after Adelaide, you know, South Australia or Queensland, that could mean that Adelaide and Brisbane have worse talent. And Western Australia's talent's already been rated heaps, so if they go after them, and, you know, if they go after Victorian players, that could reduce the depth of the draft. Because they've got, like, from memory, it's like five or six priority picks to make, though. So, be interesting. Like, it'll be definitely, and we'll definitely talk about it, you know, probably over the next week or two when they make them. And, you know, it's just, we don't really know how GWS is shaping up because we've got every other club to talk about except them. They've got one midfielder, Swanson from West Australia, and that's it.
It'll certainly be interesting to see how it plays out at, like, as you say, the plethora, the amount of talent in New South Wales isn't as, like, as dense as large as WA.
They'll sign some of the best players from both Canberra and, you know, Sydney, but because, you know, that's two separate competitions that they have access to as opposed to, like, one in Victoria or Western Australia. But I think, you know, the quality of those competitions aren't quite as strong as pretty much every other state in Australia, maybe bar Tasmania, so, and Northern Territory. So they'll need to make, like, some crafty priority selections to make up for that fact.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as we've said a few times already, I think a few times is an understatement, but we have said a few times it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. There'll be a lot to discover in this first season of the AFL Women's League, both on and off the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll finish on that. Thank you again, Nick, for joining us. That will conclude our AFL Women segment for the Saint Nice podcast today. Again, thank you, Nick, for joining us.
Thank you, Callum, and listen next week.
No problem.
It should be Friday again next week as well.
Yeah, we'll be recording on the Friday as per normal this week. So be sure to tune in for that.